You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. In the ongoing debate over healthcare in this country, we talk a lot about America's cities, but 46 million people live in rural areas. So how does healthcare stack up there? A few weeks ago, Dr. Marcia Rollerson, a pediatrician based in Brewton, Alabama, population 5,000, gave us a little perspective.
What worries me the most right now is our rural hospital. We have a rural hospital that serves a large population in this part of Lower Alabama, and they're right on the edge of going under. As far as my office is concerned, I'm a semi-retired pediatrician now. I care for only children with high-risk conditions. Already, I can't pay my bills.
Access to hospitals in rural America is just one issue highlighted in a recent report from the Bipartisan Policy Center. There are others: higher rates of obesity, heart disease, opioid use. I spoke with Heidi Schultz, a rural healthcare program officer with the Helmsley Trust based in South Dakota, and Dr. Anand Parekh, chief medical advisor with the Bipartisan Policy Center. They worked on the report together. We started with a look at whether critical access hospitals are needed in rural communities.
There are about 5,000 hospitals in the United States, about half that are located in rural areas. And the most common hospital is what's called a critical access hospital. These are hospitals that have less than 25 beds, and they're not really near another hospital. But what our report really found is that more important than a specific service like a hospital defining a community, healthcare services in rural America really need to be right-sized to fit community needs as opposed to vice versa. And it could very well be that a community is doing fine with a critical access hospital. Other communities might feel that based on their needs, what they need are a different set of services. And so one of the important points that the report was making is that policymakers really need to be attuned to communities who might want to transform their system. And there ought to be some policy options to help them transform.
Yeah, Lizzie, I wanted to add, you know, the conversation I think needs to flip from how do we save this rural hospital to what does our community need for healthcare, and to have those conversations. And then, you know, policy needs to follow to allow those communities to have what they need, which might not be inpatient beds, which is pretty typical for these, especially the more extreme rural hospitals. Inpatient is probably the least amount of volume that they have.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you guys highlight is the question of maybe having more PAs, more skilled nurses, more telemedicine. I wonder, though, how do you square that with, say, a local official who says, well, but this local hospital is also a really big employer for us, not just a provider of care?
That's a very important point. There are about 80 hospitals, critical access hospitals, that have closed over the last decade or so. And you're absolutely right, that can very much decimate a community and its local economy. But I think an even more important number is that there are probably several hundred critical access hospitals that are just barely making it. So their margins are very small. So they have low average censuses. They might only have two or three patients in the hospital. They have high operating costs. So from a sustainability perspective, in the long term, it's very hard to sustain operations like this. So I think the question for localities is how do you transform to make sure that you're more sustainable? Because at the end of the day, a transformed entity is, of course, better than a closed entity, both for community health and for the local economy.
Heidi, when you look at this from a policy standpoint, what do you see as sort of viable ways to move forward with some of these services, given that talking about healthcare is so fraught in this country?
So what we were really looking for is policymakers to look at rural in a different lens and to not just kind of paint a broad picture of healthcare and make the assumption that rural entities can fit within the decisions made in D.C. We're really just hoping that we can, you know, highlight some of these issues that are tough for rural. So, for example, value-based payment. Rural wants to do that. There's some great quality happening, but some of the reimbursement structures don't work. We don't have the numbers of patients. We don't have the volume needed.
Let's back up a little bit and sure. Define value-based payment for our listeners. So we're talking about sort of paying for specific outcomes, not necessarily services, right?
Correct. So going from paying per fee for a service, so that you're paying for, you know, like your grocery shopping and you're buying this item and this item. In medicine in general today, we're still paying for a medical service on a fee basis, but we're trying to move towards a value basis. So there are things where providers can share some of the risk to providing value-based services. There's some different models where you can just share in the savings. And there are some rural entities, you know, participating in ACOs and some of the models that are doing well. But it's very challenging for rural to participate in those models.
Where should the money come from to do this?
There does need to be some initial support. I'll give you one specific example. Heidi mentioned some of the new payment models that are being tested. One is called the Accountable Care Organization model.
Yeah, and, it was a part of the Affordable Care Act.
Exactly. And one of the tracks of the Accountable Care Organization model, these ACO model, was this advanced payment track. And in that model, entities like hospitals and clinicians who form ACOs, they get an advanced payment. That advance payment allows them to build the infrastructure, whether it's information technology or care management, to be able to engage in proper population health management. And the results from that advanced payment track of the Accountable Care Organization saw rural ACOs outperforming other ACOs and urban ACOs. And it gets back to Heidi's point that healthcare leaders in rural America, they are ready. They want to go on this ride a value-based healthcare transformation, but they do need a little bit of support, whether it's advance payment or they need a little bit of freedom from some of the regulatory constraints or otherwise to really set them up for success.
Heidi, when you talk to patients and healthcare providers, what do they tell you they want and need?
You know, what's really interesting about that is so much of what rural wants and needs doesn't have to directly deal with what we think of as healthcare, right? As inpatient services, going to the doctor at their clinic. What rural needs, what patients and providers are saying we need, and we see it in many, many of the community health needs assessments that are done, is more mental health care. Services for elderly and not just healthcare, help with housing, transportation, assisted living, care for substance abuse, and then access to primary care, access to specialists, access to more services than what they can have in their area. And then things like obesity management, weight loss, and wellness centers. What a lot of these communities don't have is a wellness center or somewhere where they can go and exercise. So there's a lot of needs in rural.
Well, Heidi Schultz and Anand Parekh, thank you both so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read more about the Rural Healthcare Report from the Bipartisan Policy Center. Just go to our website, marketplace.org. We're working on a show about rural economies, housing, work, education, technology. What do you think we need to know? Our email is weekend@marketplace.org, or you can call us 1-800-648-5114.